It's bad for them, and it's also bad for their tenants.
We are seeing unprecedented investment in housing, really at all levels.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we have more highlights from our housing series, a special focus on housing issues across the Northeast. Well, 30 years ago, a group of advocates recognized that housing discrimination was causing homelessness in western Massachusetts, and they created the Massachusetts Fair Housing Center. Today, a small group of staffers working for the agency with offices in downtown Holyoke continue to investigate and litigate housing discrimination cases. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuttle reports.
In the fall of 2016, when Jacob Carter, a graduate student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, began looking for an apartment for himself, his wife, who was 8 months pregnant, and their two-year-old son, he ran into hurdle after hurdle.
People writing back and saying that nothing was available, people not responding at all, phone calls, you know, to different landlords and different advertisements on Craigslist, and really coming up with no luck at all.
Sensing a pattern in his failure to find an apartment, Carter deleted references to his family from his online searches and started showing up alone to appointments with landlords. At one point, he signed a lease for an apartment in an older house in Northampton, but when he asked if there was any lead paint present, the landlord abruptly told him he could not move in.
Basically, we had to find emergency housing on, say, 24 hours notice. And I just looked up some places on Airbnb to see if there were, you know, overnight rentals that we might be able to find. And we were able to find one pretty quickly, but it was a really hairy, couple of days. We weren't sure what we were doing, where we were going to land.
Eventually, Carter found an apartment. Then, a few years later, when searching for a new place for his now growing family, a landlord told Carter he would not rent to him because he had children. A friend referred Carter to the Massachusetts Fair Housing Center. Discrimination complaints were brought against both landlords. With the cash settlements Carter received, he was able to save for a down payment and purchased a house where he and his wife and their three children now live. Discrimination against families with young children searching for housing makes up a significant number of the more than 1,000 complaints that come into the Fair Housing Center annually, according to Executive Director Maris Bergquist.
And I find it shocking that so many families are denied rental housing, with the only disqualifying factor being the parent of a child under the age of six. In Massachusetts in 2019. It's shocking to me that you can be evicted, you can be a childless couple who gets pregnant and is evicted by their landlord because they will be bringing a child under the age of six into the premises, and we have those cases.
To prevent children from being poisoned by lead-based paint, Massachusetts passed a law in 1971 that required landlords to remove lead paint if a child under age six is living in the apartment. Massachusetts has the fourth largest percentage of housing in the country built before 1978, when lead was banned as an ingredient in paint. But according to state health department records, just 10% of those approximately 1.8 million houses have undergone any type of de-leading.
I think that systemic housing discrimination plays a very significant role in the failure of more properties to have undergone deleting activity.
Massachusetts has programs to help property owners pay part of the cost of deleting their buildings, but very few take advantage. Bergquist said the so-called lead law is a failed policy because rather than protect the health of children as it was intended, it incentivizes housing discrimination.
Landlords find it irresistible to avoid renting to these families rather than obeying the Massachusetts lead law.
In November, the Fair Housing Center filed a lawsuit in federal court that's intended to force the state to come up with a non-discriminatory policy to prevent childhood lead poisoning. Of the approximately 1,000 complaints the center receives each year, the highest number are from people with disabilities, according to Bergquist.
There's a shortage of accessible units in our area, really shameful shortage. However, a person who uses a wheelchair, who needs an accessible unit, has the right to ask their landlord either to allow them to install a ramp at their own expense, or in Massachusetts, if the landlord has 10 or more units, they have the right to ask their landlord to install the ramp at the landlord's expense. So larger landlords who have the financial capacity can be required to install a ramp for a tenant in Massachusetts.
There is still racial discrimination in housing. The Springfield Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Hamden, Hampshire, and part of Franklin counties, is the most segregated in the country when it comes to Latino housing, and is in the top 20% for black housing. Some of the reason for this can be traced back decades to when redlining occurred and restrictive deed covenants were legal. But Bergquist said current policies contribute to housing segregation, such as giving preference to existing residents to move into public housing when a vacancy opens up, and zoning laws that don't allow multifamily housing.
When municipalities are not actively trying to undo this segregation, it's keeping it in place and, in effect, perpetuating it.
Discrimination in housing remains one of the causes of homelessness, according to Jerry McCafferty, the housing director for the city of Springfield.
Both in Springfield and nationally, there's data that shows that people of color are more likely to become homeless than white people, and the rates at which they're homeless exceed the amount that should be explained by poverty.
Massachusetts has among the toughest housing discrimination laws in the country, but McCafferty said enforcement can be difficult.
It's a lot of private transactions that are happening, and it's hard to be there at all of them, and it's hard to get people to always understand that it's discrimination and report it. So there's a lot that is illegal, that landlords may even know is illegal, that they're doing because they're able to get away with it.
John Fisher, a landlord and author of the book Property Management Manual for Massachusetts Rental Owners, said many landlords are ignorant of what the housing laws require.
There are a lot of mom and pops out there who don't really think of themselves as being landlords because they only have like one apartment that they're renting. If you're renting even just a small upstairs apartment, you're as much a landlord and as need to as much be in line with the state laws as if you had 1,000 units.
Fisher believes most landlords do not intentionally discriminate.
The level of ignorance with so many landlords, especially the smaller ones, is unfortunately, it's bad for them and it's also bad for their tenants.
The Fair Housing Center litigates about 20 cases a year, according to Executive Director Bergquist.
Each case in and of itself can establish a new policy that may open doors and end discrimination that applies to more than one person, that may apply to a particular class of people.
Most complaints that the center's investigators determined to be valid are resolved through mediation. That's what happened the both times that Jacob Carter encountered discrimination while hunting for an apartment for his family. Carter is grateful for the work of the Fair Housing Center.
It's a really serious issue that isn't on the radar of a lot of people. But if you think about the kind of security that housing provides and that what it's like to feel safe going to your home and knowing that it's going to be there and knowing that you're going to have a place to stay every night, it seems like such a basic need, and it is.
Reporting from WAMC's Pioneer Valley News Bureau on the campus of Western New England University, I'm Paul Tuthill.
The city of Albany, New York has a complicated history with building neighborhoods. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas reports on how today's housing trends are playing out in a city that dates back more than four centuries.
The last time the housing picture underwent a dramatic change in the city of Albany was in the late 1960s, when construction of the South Mall office complex uprooted generations of interconnected ethnic neighborhoods. It sent residents scrambling. Some called it a forced migration. The current change, equally dramatic, has been progressing under the radar. Rent is rising across the city. Rezoning has resulted in construction of new apartment buildings. Road diets are changing the look and flow of major thoroughfares, altering people's perceptions of quality of life in neighborhoods they traverse, along with revitalization of some of the city's oldest neighborhoods, sparked by Mayor Kathy Sheehan's vision of a walkable city. In October, the Democrat presided over a grand reopening at the Ida Yarborough Apartments, public housing at 280 North Pearl Street, at the center of a redevelopment initiative that includes construction of a seven-story high-tech apartment building.
When I talk about creating a city where every neighborhood works, where every neighborhood is safe, where every neighborhood has quality housing that's affordable to the people who live there and has access to great jobs, this is the vision. This is the manifestation of that vision, of creating housing that is focused on affordability at multiple levels, on our families, and on being close to centers for employment, and really focusing on creating a sense of pride. When you have pride in your neighborhood, when you have pride in where you live, anything is possible.
Federal and state credits helped fund the $45 million Ida Yarborough project. When complete, there will be 335 apartments. The mayor herself recently moved into a rehabbed home downtown. In December, the $82 million Nick apartment building, once home to the now-defunct Knickerbocker News, opened at 16 Sheridan Avenue with 132 apartments. The Albany County Land Bank has been a driving force behind rehabilitation in the city. Adam Zarenko is executive director.
We serve a wide variety of buyers, everyone from first-time home buyers that are ready to take on a rehab project to investors who have sizable real estate portfolios and everything in between, including owner-occupants. So we see a lot of people of all different ages, but especially more and more young folks who are not prepared to move into one of the shared apartment complexes that are being built around the region. They want to do home ownership, but also have a revenue stream, so they may buy a building and do an owner-occupy scenario where they rent out one unit and live in the other, because rental is not for everyone, and in many cases we can create pathways to building wealth through real estate ownership that may not be available to folks through the traditional real estate acquisition process.
While some would like to put the brakes on new rehab projects and housing developments, others, like Rebecca Garrard, statewide organizer for housing justice with Citizen Action of New York, are calling for increased protection for tenants, including rent stabilization.
50% of renters in Albany pay more than 30% of their income in rent, and we know that that is not an affordable metric, and it feeds housing insecurity. So, you know, we know that new development around housing tends to be luxury-based and caters towards high-income tenants, and so what we don't have is development of housing that is affordable to community members. We live in a state where half of residents are rent burdened, and that is the exact same statistic we see here in Albany. Homelessness is on the rise, and so, you know, the reality is that for every person across the state, housing is something that is a concern on a daily basis, how to pay for it. People are one paycheck away, one crisis away from, you know, a situation that could displace them.
According to the website Rent Jungle, the average apartment rent over the last 6 months in Albany has increased by $214, 19.8%. Average rent for an apartment in Albany is $1,300, a 15.12% increase from last year. This fall, the Common Council passed a new equity agenda to assist neighborhoods with the greatest needs. While not specifically directed toward housing, Common Councilor Dorsey Appleers, later tapped to be the next city auditor, said it serves as an influencer.
There is no specific language in the equity legislation that speaks to housing. That being said, what we anticipate will indirectly happen is that when we distribute our city resources in an equitable manner, we bring up the quality of the built environment in all of our wards. And in turn, this promotes mixed income communities and I think a desire for people to move into wards that they haven't looked at before. For example, in the legislation, we address issues such as violence, infrastructure, sidewalks, streets. Those things are really important to people when they're looking at where they want to live.
Citizen Action's Gerard favors a vacancy study. She says knowing the vacancy rate will help Albany develop protections for city residents living in rental housing. She concedes there is fear when talk turns to rent stabilization.
There's a ton of fear and some pushback around the idea of rent stabilization coming to Albany. But again, it does not prohibit real estate being profitable. Real estate will continue to be probably the most profitable industry that you can find. But we have to begin to do something to address, you know, the affordability crisis that renters are experiencing in the city of Albany.
Mayor Sheehan's outlook takes a 180-degree turn.
Well, you know, we are seeing unprecedented investment in housing really at all levels. We're seeing unprecedented investment in affordable housing and unprecedented investment in market rate housing and workforce housing. So we're really seeing developers come in and build for people really at every spectrum across the income lines, which is really what we need to be seeing. We need to ensure that we're creating housing that is affordable to the people who live in the city and that we're also attracting people to the city. You know, when people ask about all of these apartments and the hundreds of millions of dollars that we're investing, they keep saying, who's going to live there? And I remind them that this used to be a city of 136,000 people. And we want to make sure that we're continuing to win in the global competition for people.
Sheehan believes the current population figure of 98,800 is an undercount. She says if we're over 100,000 people in the coming 2020 census, we qualify for different buckets of federal funding, and it really would be a huge advantage to the city. House Prices and Trends website Redfin describes the Albany housing market as very competitive, noting the average Albany house price was $200,000 last month, up 2% over last year. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
We'll have more from our ongoing housing series coming up on the WAMC News podcast. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.